morning and welcome back to your Hebrew Nation Morning Show, where Hebrews from all over the world gather to share and listen about the biblical roots of our faith. Sit back with your favorite morning brew and join the conversation. Lines are now open, so call 503-967-3001. 503-967-3001. Nation, His kingdom, His people, and your radio station.
Good morning, everyone. Welcome to the Remnant Road with Mike Clayton, Al McCarn, and the Without Power, Barry Phillips, up in Gloucester Point. And hopefully, God willing, the only thing crazy about or insane about this program is that silly rooster. Can't say that about everything that happens, though.
I don't know, Mike. Here we are without accountability. Power's out in Gloucester. Barry's joining us by phone. It's a tenuous link. And Barry, you are the elder among us. And if you go, then I don't know what's going to happen.
Well, I guess I'll just do my best to stick around, you know. That's all I know to do.
I'm really thrilled that he's now the elder among us.
Yes.
Better than being a fungus among us.
That's true.
Yes.
So here in Charlotte, we have had nasty rain and sleet and such. And yesterday I walked out in the morning with my dog and saw the remnants of about 2 millimeters of snow. And that was it.
Well, we got about 2 inches here, walked out, or actually threw my dog out yesterday morning onto the porch because it was cold and snowy and I didn't have my paws on yet. So she went out, and that's the first time that Kaya had ever seen snow, and she decided she liked it.
Ah, yes. Well, they are funny in snow. Now, I know someone else who's in snow at the moment and might be on the road even as we speak, and our good friend and brother from Florida, David Altman, who took a journey through West Virginia yesterday and got stopped by the snow just across the state line.
Yeah, I heard he's even figured out that when you go north, you might want to buy a pair of gloves.
There is that.
You know,
I think this may be the second time he's driven through snow, but you know, when you're living in a subtropical place like Florida, snow is a four-letter word.
Yeah, I remember my mother saying, "Look, it's snowing." You know, the various three or four times of childhood, "Look, there's snow," and she'd point to one little something coming down from the sky. It's like, I don't even hardly see that, you know. So the first time that I ever saw snow was in L.A., of all places.
Lower Alabama?
L.A.
You got it. Lower Alabama. Yeah. I was at, I just left Fort Jackson, South Carolina. It was the coldest winter that on record in South Carolina. I moved to Fort Rucker, Alabama, and we got about 3 or 4 inches of snow. And that's the first time I'd ever seen it. Standing out there with my jump boots on, that was bad.
Now, I did see, I have the blessing of being connected to a Messianic group on Facebook in New Zealand.
Mm-hmm.
And I saw they had a Hanukkah event planned, which looked to be a picnic at a lake. So it's different in New Zealand at this time of year.
Yes, yes,
it's
it
nice
is.
And warm.
It is. I was actually in New Zealand 1 year, about this time, actually. And it was absolutely beautiful weather because it's springtime. Then I was also back in June, July, and it was cold. Now, there's no way that you can convince your body when it's June or July that you should be putting on a coat and you should be cold, you know, that you're cold. It just doesn't work. So that's what happens when you stand on your head and the water in the toilet goes backwards.
Oh boy. You know, I did, however, right here, not far from where I live, I did see a young man who was wearing shorts to a Hanukkah party. And that was interesting because everybody else was bundled up because it was cold. And I got to talk to him because I hadn't met him yet. He's from Alaska, so this is like springtime weather for them.
Oh, yeah. You should have seen. We were at, with Hanok, and we'll have him on in just a little while. We were at the Columbia, South Carolina Hanukkah lighting. It was the third night. And it was in the 40s, I guess. People were dressed up like they were going to Antarctica. I had a jacket on, you know, because I mean, just I lived in Florida, I lived in Alaska. My body doesn't know what to do with anything. But I mean, it literally looked like we were about to take an expedition across the pole.
Now, speaking of Columbia,
yes.
Mike,
as you just did.
As you just did, a couple of That's things right. that I would like to say about the fair city of Columbia, South Carolina. One thing is I really enjoyed my time last Monday evening with you and Hanok and Craig and Jan O'Dell at the Gates to Zion in West Columbia, mm-hmm. as we heard Hanok speak. That was awesome. He's speaking in Brandon, Florida. I think today, tomorrow, and then he's going to come visit you, Barry, and I hope you have a warm house to put him in.
You know, certainly by then we should have this issue resolved. If not, we'll give him an extra blanket.
All right. I'm sure he'll appreciate that. The other thing that I'd like to mention about Columbia, our good buddy Will Spires, whom we have interviewed here about his new novel, TS-44, The Button Tree Prophet, which is set in the fair city of Columbia, South Carolina. Guess what? They're now planning the book launch. It's soon, like, Kia David Publishing's about to make it available. The reason that David Altman was in Winchester, Kentucky over the weekend was because the books have arrived from the printer. And we are so excited about that.
Wow.
So, yeah, it's a good
Will.
Book.
That's awesome news.
Yeah.
Yes.
It's a good book. It's really good book. I have not read it yet. My wife has and said that it was really, really good. She actually was one of the people that did the review on it.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Good book. So once the details come out about how to order it, which should be on keyofdavidpublishing.com this week, then, you know, we'll give it a shameless plug. And anyway, there was something else about Columbia. What was that, Mike, you were saying? Something that might have pertinence here in this discussion about the restoration of all Israel?
Well, last night we had, Kathy and I were, we did the lighting of the Hanukkah, the last night of Hanukkah. And, you know, Hanukkah is a very special time for me. I was actually on the road the first 3 days of Hanukkah with Hanok. But it's about dedication. And the way that Hanukkah has been watered down over the years bothers me to no end. We went to the Hanukkah lighting at Columbia at the City Hall area. I guess it's actually the Capitol building there, since that's the capital of South Carolina. And a bunch of politicians were there, which they bother me to begin with. But it thanks, Barry. And people may take exception with what I'm about to say, but if anyone is looking for American Judaism to be of any relevance in the restoration of all things, that dog ain't hunting. They began this observance with the bringing in of the United States flag and a pledge of allegiance to the flag. Now, is there anything wrong with that? No, not specifically. But where was the Hatikvah? Where was the mention of Israel? The first Jewish man leader to stand up and begin to address the crowd quoted from 3 years ago, the Hanukkah greeting from ex-President Obama. Mm-hmm. They had a mayor up there that got up and bloviated, not too eloquently, stating that 2018 was the darkest year in American history. And it went downhill. I mean, just continued to just go to craziness of, this is about a miracle of oil. No, it's not. Hanukkah is not about a miracle of oil. Hanukkah is about a people who stood for the temple and the Torah and a people in covenant. That's what Hanukkah is about. And these people took it to something of just ridiculousness. Yeah, it ticked me off.
You know, even we, when we were good, solid church-going folk and celebrated Christmas, we said the same thing about the commercialization of Christmas. Mm-hmm. Okay, the reason it was instituted in the first place, the reason I celebrated it all the time I was in the church, was because that was when I believe Jesus was born, or at least that's when we observe it. But it is too easy for all these holidays to become just a reason to celebrate, just a reason to have fun.
Let me ask a question. Well, Hanukkah, which is, you know, we've talked about this before, it's not one of the scriptural mandated holidays. Are we doing the same thing? Are we secularizing or trivializing or watering down, diluting Pesach and Shavuot? Have we turned Sukkot into a great campout experience instead of Sukkot, as it would be encouraged? How are we doing on those areas?
And Al, they call me the troublemaker? Really?
Just a thought, guys. Just a thought.
I'm totally with you, Barry. Al?
Yeah, we tend to do that. Guys, I listened to an awesome teaching this morning, and it was on Hanukkah. Lex Meyer presented this teaching, and you can find Lex at unlearnthelies.com. That's his website. This is the latest video that he presented, and it was a teaching that he gave. I don't know, it might have been at Shabbat. Anyway, he starts in John 10 explaining why was Yeshua in the temple in winter at the Feast of Dedication. And it was really encouraging to hear him explain all that Good Shepherd talk that Yeshua said in that same chapter, John 10. Mm-hmm. There's connections to prophecies of Isaiah and Ezekiel and many others. And that's why when they asked him, will you tell us plainly, are you the Messiah or not? And he says, I already told you. Well, when he's giving that Good Shepherd talk, he's saying, yes, I am the Messiah. Mm-hmm. Oh, yes, and I am the divine Messiah, because God is the one who said he's going to do this. You want to hear it for yourselves, folks, go to unlearnthelies.com and listen, or just dig out the prophecies for yourself. That is great. But, you know, toward the end of the presentation, Lex is talking about the significance of Hanukkah. And he goes into 1st and 2nd Maccabees and explains something of what these heroes of the faith went through. And we know, Barry and Mike, we know a bit about that horrendous persecution that the Jews of the day, who were faithful to their God and the covenant of their God, endured under the Greeks. It was awful. It, as much as it was awful under the Nazis, which was a much bigger scale than what the Greeks did to the Jews, you know, 2,100 years ago. This was terrible, what they endured. And they did it to remain faithful, even reminding us the story, Lex reminded us the story in Maccabees of a 90-year-old man who they said, just eat this little bit of pork and you'll be fine and we won't bother you again. And he said, no. And he went to his death rather than disobey the commandments of the living God. And this is the point that Lex is explaining of how serious these folks took the covenant and the God of the covenant and being faithful to him. And that's the question that is put in front of every generation of God's people up to right now. And Mike, that is one aspect of what you have observed in Colombia at the menorah lighting, is that there are a lot of people who have forgotten the seriousness of the covenant and the God who made the covenant. And I would say there's a lot of people on both sides of the family who have forgotten or never even knew.
Mm-hmm. To celebrate, and this is something that would have happened in you know, in Reformed, and I'm not trying to point a finger of judgment here. This is just the facts, folks. Reformed Judaism, many of those congregations would have celebrated Hanukkah with a dinner that included shrimp.
And why is that a big deal?
Barry, you got a thought there?
Well, I mean, the idea of Hanukkah is rooted in the preservation and the authenticity of the Hebraic lineage, as was solely defended at that time by Judah, mm-hmm. Yehuda, our Jewish brothers. And part of that preservation of the lineage is adherence to the commands, which would have forbade and still forbid the shrimp. I mean, so it's as if then, if that's the case, Mike, they have lost total, all reality, a complete disconnect from what they're celebrating. Let's celebrate our separation by assimilation. That's inconceivable. That doesn't work.
But, yeah, they were definitely, there was this thing of trying to, and Hanok can explain this, and I'm actually repeating some of the things Hanok said. They were trying to prove that they were more American than Jewish. Yeah, you know, I've been teaching some other teachings on the web lately. Proverbs 29:18, without vision, the people perish. I mean, that verse is quoted everywhere. Okay? Without prophetic vision, the people perish, or the people throw off restraint. Do you guys know what the second part of that verse is?
I just looked at that the other day.
But he who guards the Torah.
Mm-hmm.
will be blessed. He who shemar Torah, he who guards the Torah will be blessed. So what this is saying is when we depart, when a people depart from the Torah, they will lose their prophetic vision of the coming kingdom and throw off all restraint to move forward to it.
Mike, what this says is not limited only to our Jewish brethren, but...
Oh, no.
It is, again, all of God's people in all ages, in all places, have faced the same question of, do we stand firm for the one who called us to be a peculiar people, dedicated mm-hmm. unto himself, mm-hmm. or do we look like everyone around us? Mm-hmm. Whether that means Jews who are trying to be good Germans in 1937,
mm-hmm.
or Jews who are trying to be good Americans in 2018, or Christians who are trying to be more American than Christian in 2018, mm-hmm. or anywhere else. If we're, and you know, the compromises come in small ways. Like this 90-year-old man recounted in the book of 2 Maccabees who refused to eat a little piece of pork because that's where the focal point came of whether he's going to remain set apart for his God or merge with the world. And so it is with all of us. In Christian circles, we have stories of martyrs down through the ages saying, you know, just renounce your faith, renounce Jesus this one time, and we won't bother you. Mm-hmm. Recant. And you can go back and live however you want, but just do this. It's a formality. And people go to their graves for it, for that name, just like Jews have gone to the grave holding up the Torah as best they can.
Mm-hmm. So what's the key to it all? To be restored to the Torah is to be restored to vision, is to be restored to the covenant. So the Torah, the restoration, being restored to the Torah is more than just a lifestyle. It is becoming who we were intended and created to be.
There it is. It's an identity question.
Mm-hmm.
Who are you and whose are you?
It also comes down to who do you want to be in covenant with? You know, if we're going to be in covenant with Yahweh, our Creator, then we need to be restored to His commands, to His lifestyle, to His perspective, His character, His desires. Otherwise, we'll end up making covenant with the world that is around us. And when you read First Yochanan, First John, you know, he says all that is in this world is the lust of the eye, the lust of the flesh, and the pride of life. And we're warned, do not be a friend with the world, or you'll become the enemy of Elohim. So we have a young, impressionable, contemporary Christian artist with a lovely voice and a beautiful testimony of how the Father has healed and delivered her, going into a interview and being asked, do you believe homosexuality is a sin? And her response was, I don't know. I'm still young and new at this, so maybe someone else can study the Bible and tell me.
Mm.
And I thought, that's a dive. You just dodged that.
Mm.
You know, she's been applauded and accepted on one of the late night talk shows and was on Ellen. And it may have even been Ellen that asked her on the Ellen DeGeneres show, who is an acknowledged and admitted lesbian. And, you know, the world seems to be applauding her. Who do you choose to be in covenant with?
Barry, to be fair, let me tell you something from my story in the last 45 seconds of this segment. There was a time in the 90s that I was ambivalent about abortion. You know, and I've been a Christian all my life and a follower of Jesus all my life. Fact is, I had to be educated. And once I understood what it was, then I began to understand how grieved our God is over the taking the innocent lives of the unborn. And mm-hmm. in that case, there is a need to be educated and to dig things out for yourself and to be guided. But there's also willful ignorance, and that's where we have a problem.
Indeed.
And there's a lot of willful ignorance out there today.
There's a lot of music coming up in just a second. So folks, hang on, we'll be right back. Hashem Moshiach, HaMelech Yanenu, Hashem Moshiach, HaMelech Yanenu, HaMelech Yanenu, Biyom Korenu.
Shining city on a hill, Yerushalayim. We're longing for you, Yerushalayim. We know where we belong, Yerushalayim. We're coming back home.
Welcome back to the Remnant Road with Mike Clayton, Al McCarn, and myself via telephone, Barry Phillips. And thank you, Will Spires, for making us homesick all over again, not merely just to go to the nation of Israel, though that's enjoyable, exciting, but to go home to the kingdom. Can't wait to get home in that aspect. We're looking for Hanok Young. Hanok, if you are listening via whatever device you may have at hand, we're trying to reach you. So reach us back, will you, brother? Otherwise, Mike, you've seen something other that may be of import at this junction in our discussion. What was it you stumbled on the other day?
Oh, well, this dedication of the altar for the Third Temple. Yeah, this was put out just, what was it, on the 10th of December. And I'm still trying to, and I really wanted to talk to Hanok about it because I haven't had a chance to do that. But it appears that the Sanhedrin and this group called the Sanhedrin is not an elected group. They're kind of more of a, you know, okay, we are them. But they have gone through with a full dress reenactment of the daily sacrifice. That's an interesting thing. And it's going to cause probably some waves on all sides. We don't really know at this moment in time what the significance is going to be. Is this something that is more symbolic than real meat? Well, we'll find out. But, you know, it's kind of like the moving of the embassy, quote unquote, moving the embassy to Jerusalem has been at the moment more symbolic than anything else. But does it have prophetic meaning? Yeah, I believe it does. So what are you guys seeing about this?
Well, Mike, you are right. This is, in many circles, called the nascent Sanhedrin,
mm-hmm.
because it's a group of rabbis who got together and said, well, we're back in the land. We've been back in the land for decades. Why don't we have the Sanhedrin, the holy court of the people of Israel? You know, I applaud the effort, and I applaud the efforts of the Temple Institute to get things ready to reinstitute the priesthood and educate these men to do what they're supposed to do. Now, beyond that, and by the way, dress rehearsals are necessary for these things. It's not like it's going to happen right out of thin air that, poof, there's a temple and there's a priesthood. Now, that's why they've been working very hard for years. So, yay, good for them. I kind of think it's going to have traction one way or the other. Whether this Sanhedrin ends up being the Sanhedrin, I don't know. Eventually, when all the rest of Israel, the house of Israel, all of us who aren't Jewish, when we come back, that Sanhedrin is going to have to be more than just Jewish scholars. I have no idea when or how that would happen, because at the moment, most of our people don't even understand that they are Hebrew.
Yeah, which is kind of like this week's Torah portion that Barry and I will be talking about here in a couple of days.
Oh, yeah.
And there's another aspect of this as well. You have in the book of Daniel a declaration of the final week. 69 weeks out of 70 have transpired. We have this final week or seven-year period. In conjunction with that, Daniel was given understanding that there is this one that is coming, a prince of the people who would destroy the city. And he would cause a ceasing of the daily tamid, the daily offerings at 9 a.m. and 3 p.m. There seems to be an understanding that in the last days that there will be a reconstructed temple, that there will be a resuming of the daily tamid offerings, which will, you know, if they can find, they don't even have to build the temple. If they can establish a foundation stone, you know, they could begin offerings on that stone, I guess, provided that it hasn't been hammered upon. But if they can do that, if they do that, then the lawless one that is also described elsewhere will at some point cause a ceasing of that that ritual, that observance. So there's going to be a temple. It's going to happen. And there's going to be an outcry against it, both by those who believe it to be an attempt to replace the completed work of Yeshua, which it will not be. Then PETA, I'm sure, will be outraged that animals will be sacrificed. And then the millennial wave will have issues. Those who are vegan. There's going to be an amalgamation of worldwide groups lined up in protest against that altar. But if they ever get started, they're going to continue to do that. Here's a thought. If they start the temple, if they build the temple, will we be going to Jerusalem three times a year?
Let's see. This has already happened twice. Now, the generation that came back from Babylon knew that they were supposed to rebuild the temple and start again the daily offerings. Now, that was kind of a no-brainer because it was still within living memory. In fact, Ezra tells us that there were the elderly among the people when the altar was dedicated who wept when they remembered the glory of the first temple. Okay, so again, it's a no-brainer. You know, the Jews come back. They're supposed to build the temple. The priests, there's already record of who the priests are. It's only been 70 years. People will know who they are. And then it was started again in the days of the Maccabees after the desecration that the Greeks did.
Hello?
So, oh, hey, Hanok is back with us.
Hey, guys, sorry.
Oh, well, you are the guy who can answer all the questions because that's right. So, Mike, why don't you ask the questions?
So, Hanok, I received an email earlier from the Jewish National Enquirer, the dedication of an altar for the Third Temple. Have you looked into it? I know you're on the road.
I've seen the report. It's more sizzle than steak, unfortunately. It's, you know, the nascent Sanhedrin. I guess I would kind of call it the baby Sanhedrin, which people in America and around the world don't realize is brand new and has no authority whatsoever. No authority over the chief rabbinate, no authority over the, no authority over anyone that doesn't want them to have authority over them. So it's much ado about nothing. I wish it was, you know, far more substantial, but the third temple is not ready to be built yet, basically because we don't want it bad enough. And when we do, we will figure out a way to get everything done that we need to get done, including the very location where the temple needs to be built.
But to bait you just a little bit, is this does this have more prophetic significance than the candle lighting in Columbia, South Carolina?
Yes. but you're talking about a situation that's like when people say, well, isn't President Trump better for Israel than President Obama was? I mean, you know, it's like, duh. When you take two polar extremes, you know, you come up with an obvious difference. Mm-hmm. But yeah, listen, in Israel, we continue to march forward towards the restoration. We continue to do everything we can to bring the redemptive process. Our Jewish co-religionists in America are busy trying to figure out, I don't know what they're trying to figure out, but it's certainly not about the restoration.
Yeah, in the first half hour, Hanok, I told a little bit about your head exploding in Colombia. So I was trying to talk to people about what happened.
I quickly put a hat on and a hood because my kippah just wasn't retaining retaining my brains.
Hanok, this gets to the point I was trying to make, but you have just zeroed in right on it. After the return from Babylon, the Jewish exiles wanted it. They knew they're supposed to reinstitute the daily offerings and rebuild the temple. After the Maccabees liberated the temple, they knew they're supposed to do this again. But it's been almost 2,000 years since the second temple was destroyed. And what you have just said, because we don't want it enough, how do we get there? What signs do we know? I mean,
well, you know, it's interesting. For instance, in the Connect to Israel tour that Mike and I lead, we go up to Har HaBayit, the Temple Mount, and I can assure you that that's not the same experience that other people have had just going up, taking a stroll and, you know, checking out the neighborhood kind of thing. So it's a matter of education and exposure, which is why I travel as much as I do, trying to share as much as I do to get people up to speed with the significance of the Beit HaMikdash, the temple, the importance of reclaiming the Har HaBayit, the Temple Mount, and how Hanukkah, which is the holiday of dedication and rededication, by the way, for the Hebrew scholars listening in, it's the same root as my name, Hanoch, means the same thing. This is, you know, if you'll pardon the expression, 'tis the season. This is the time. This is the time to rededicate ourselves to the restoration of the Beit HaMikdash, the temple, and the restoration of all things that we need to be focused upon.
So that's right, but it seems that the people of Hashem all along have only had a tiny, tiny minority, a remnant, a fraction, who actually take that seriously and want to do it.
Well, so, it's like everyone, you know, everywhere in the world, there are those who lead, and there are the wildebeests that follow. you know, it's interesting. A number of years ago in Manhattan, I saw the play on Broadway, The Miserables. Mm. I don't know if I pronounced that correctly. And, you know, I have to be one of the, like, five people in the world that really hated it. But the scene that I like the most, and there's also a neoclassic art piece called Liberty on the Barricades, you know, jumping up on the barricade, waving the flag, follow me. That's what we need. And now that doesn't mean that everyone listening has to be a leader, but everyone listening has to decide that now is the time that they're going to get off their couch, off their chair, and, you know, do more than simply going into their prayer closet and actually doing the things that they can be doing right now to bring about the restoration.
So when you say we don't want it enough or we're not serious enough, you're not just talking about Israeli Jews. You're talking about the whole family.
Yeah, I'm talking about all of Israel. I'm talking about the people who are still walking around. I saw this on Facebook the other day. This also almost made my head explode, where someone was saying not only should Ephraimites not observe Hanukkah, because they made up something, because, you know, it's obvious in the book of John, 10th chapter, I believe, when it speaks of Yeshua, you know, being, you know, at the temple for Hanukkah, someone said, well, that doesn't mean he observed it. Maybe he was there to tell the Pharisees they were wrong. Well, you know, you would think that something as important as that, allegedly, that he would have, you know, it would have been recorded in the New Testament. Also, because people have never been to Israel and they have no clue about geography, think that he was just in the middle of winter when it was really cold, really rainy, the roads were terrible, that Yeshua would have gone from the Galil, from the Galilee, all the way to Yerushalayim just to be hanging out. I mean, it's beyond stupid. Now, not only that, someone said, well, Hanukkah is pagan. Pagan? You know, I got to rip that word out of people's lexicons. I mean, it's people don't know. And, you know, Mike likes to quote John Wayne, you can't stop stupid. And, you know, people really, the only way that we're going to move forward is if people begin scratching their heads and saying, what can I do for the restoration? As opposed to what can I complain about and whine about and be nitpicky about today?
Hey, with this, Hanukkah, I'm going to ask you, you know, since I dropped you off at the deli there in Greenville, how's your week been?
Actually, it's been wonderful. I've been with the most wonderful people. I was with our dear friends, Jerry and Renee Lambert, yeah, in Six Mile, South Carolina. I've been with the wonderful Beit Tehila community here in Brandon, Florida. Tomorrow I get to be with our dear mutual friend, David Jones, at Ruach Ministries in Brandon. Wednesday I go up to what I think is a bit chilly Virginia and see Phillips, who's conspicuously absent today. I hope it's not, you know,
He's there in the background. What you don't know is that Barry is on his cell phone because they have no power, and they're rubbing two sticks together to remain warm. So,
am I hearing that subtle hint that I should be contacting Southwest Airlines and seeing if I could fly directly from Tampa up to New York? you know,
you've heard the song Three Dog Night, or the band Three Dog Night.
Yeah, I actually have, come to think of it.
Do you know the reason for a three-dog night?
Three-dog night, yeah. But you need three dogs around you to keep warm.
That's right.
That's another thing I learned in Franklin, North Carolina. Yes. See? Yes.
Yes.
Indeed. Indeed. Anyway, I'm afraid that Barry, you know, only had a minimal quantity of Hanukkah exposure that he could tolerate within 1 week. So he was saving it up for Wednesday.
we'll see if we can't get.
Oh, there's Barry.
A little power. Yeah, we'll get some power on around here for you.
Oh, listen, I'll light up all of Gloucester, Virginia. Don't worry about it. I'm charged.
I'm charged. Sure you will. Let me ask a question here, Hanuk, if I may, in regards to the restoration and to the temple in particular.
Yes.
American minds would say, I know what I'll do. I'll send money over to the Temple Institute or some such group, and that's my part. While that may be, you know, helpful, certainly there's more that we can do besides send some money. What would be a more practical opportunity that we might want to take advantage of?
Well, you know, listen, if they join Mike and I on our Connect to Israel tour September 1st through the 13th, 2019, I can assure them that I will give them a guiding on the Temple Mount that they will never forget for the rest of their lives. That's one little element. The other thing is, it's funny that you mention it, because back in, I guess it was 2017, I did a brief teaching at a conference at Kol HaMashiach Congregation, Lake City, Florida, on the Temple and the Temple Mount. And I actually, in the last 48 hours, funny that you mention it, it's dawned on me that I should prepare that and have it professionally filmed and have it posted on my my soon-to-be YouTube channel to be able to provide more education for people. I still bump into the mental midgets who seem to insist that it's a thing, quote-unquote, that the temple wasn't on the Temple Mount. Mm-hmm. What's astounding is there's not a single person in all of Israel, the state of Israel, that actually ever thought that that was a serious thing. I've spoken to archaeologists like Professor Dan Bahat, who was responsible for all the archaeology in the Western Wall tunnels. He couldn't believe that people actually thought that. He said, have they ever been to Israel or are they just stupid? I mean, that's what he said. That's what Drake.
Boy, it sounds like somebody you really get along with there.
I'm not going to pour Ceylon date honey on it and make it sweet for y'all, you know.
No, we never thought you would.
Do you realize how many days it's been since I've had any caffeinated beverage? I even ran out of my energy sticks from Pure. I mean, it's unbelievable. I'm just going into storehouses within my own spirit here.
We need to call David Jones and warn him.
Just give him the quote. Ask him if he's ever seen the movie The Fly, and then just have the following quote. Be afraid, .. Be very afraid.
Al, help us. Help us, please.
I don't know if there's any help that can be given.
You know, I do have to say, I really appreciate that Al and Char, you know, drove to West Columbia, South Carolina to visit with me. I actually was sick that night, but still gave a presentation that people there seem to find very impactful. And I'm glad for the opportunity. Now is a good time to mention that I will be returning to the U.S. at the end of June. Unfortunately, not before then. I have guiding commitments, Bo Hashem, thank God. So if people would like to host me at the very end of June throughout the month of July, and there is a rumor that Mike Clayton and I might be doing a Blues Brothers road trip to some locations in the Southeast, doing a special joint presentation, that too, be afraid, be very afraid. Please contact me. My website is kolyehuda.com, kolyehuda.com. You've got all the, you know, my contact information on our Connect to Israel tour. And I have to tell you, we're only taking 20 to 25 people in September. People are already signing up within the first hour that we posted it. People have signed up. So now, last night, a guy drove an hour and a half from Lake City to Brandon, where I wasn't even speaking last night at Beit Tehillah, just to speak to me because he had heard me speak about the Connect to Israel tour over a year and a quarter ago in Lake City, and he wants to sign up.
Cool.
So, you know, I told him to go online. You know, I wasn't taking deposits with me, but, you know, I mean, it's great. So you don't want to sign up now. You don't want to get left behind.
Oh, yes.
Sign up now.
To be left behind. Well, and, I do want to, Al, let me give you something. We'd like to do kind of a lottery here of something. I'm not sure what the gift will be, but, you know, this possibility of Hanok and I doing like this thing together, speaking together, we'd like to name that. And, you know, the names Mutt and Jeff have already been taken, Lewis and Costello, that's all been done. You know, so we could have kind of a lotto, and the prize is maybe, you know, dinner with Hanok or something.
I don't know if that's the prize or that's the penalty, but Blues Brothers has already been taken. Neither Mike nor I have a black hat. Well, actually, I have a brand new Under Armour black hat. I could wear that. Not the same thing.
You know, Button Jeff. I get to play Jeff.
Rocky and Bullwinkle.
Y'all got to start doing a lot more thinking than that.
I've got a great suggestion.
I don't want to hear it.
Hebrew Homies Tour.
Hebrew Homies Tour. Wow. I got to tell you, that would need a special blessing from Pastor Cletus himself. So I don't know if that's, please, I really, may God bless and keep Pastor Cletus far away from us.
See ya. No.
Thank you, guys.
KolYehuda.com. I'm a Yisrael Chai. I'm a Yisrael Chai. Oh,
morning, and welcome back to your Hebrew Nation Morning Show, where Hebrews from all over the world gather to share and listen about the biblical roots of our faith. Sit back with your favorite morning brew and join the conversation. Lines are now open, so call 503-967-3001. 503-967-3001. Nation, His kingdom, His people, and your radio station.
Welcome back to the Remnant Road with the following people: Al McCarron, Mike Clayton, Barry Phillips, and we have gone from playing Where in the World is Hanok Young to Where in the World is Cole Davis. We found Hanok.
Or Hanok found us.
Yes, but Cole is still in exile.
Well, Mike, as you pointed out on the break, Cole still works for a living. So,
as opposed to you, who you're retired, and me and Barry are in ministry, so that doesn't qualify.
Maybe not. Anyway, it would be good if Cole will join us if he's able, and if not, we will have him on another day. But in the meantime, Mike, we were talking, the three of us, about the latest outrage, the latest atrocity that has happened in the land that God himself cares for. Tell us what it is.
So in the town of Ophrah, which is just north of Jerusalem into Judea, Samaria, up into the area of Benjamin, terrorists shot at a car. There was a mother pregnant, believe the child was 30 weeks. And at this point in time, the mother has opened her eyes. The father of this woman has said that she's opened her eyes. She's stable. The baby is still in critical condition, having to be delivered by C-section. And, you know, it reminded me, you said outrage. We could only pray that there would be an outrage over things like this that would be sustainable. Let's go back to David Reuven, former mayor of Shiloh, who was shot. His car was shot at numerous years ago. His child they said that the bullet was 1/8 of an inch. If it had been off from where it hit him, 1/8 of an inch, the child would have died. There was an outrage. The politicians all stood up and declared how terrible this was, and then they went back to, you know, whatever latkes they were eating the day before. You know, this thing of outrage is temporary. This, what is happening in Israel today, the atrocities that are happening in Israel, and to think that Bibi Netanyahu and the other politicians are playing politics with people's lives is beyond forgivable. It is just, to me, to, you know, to bring up these websites and, you know, to look at once again, here's a mother whose only sin is that she was DWJ driving while Jewish. That was her great sin that caused her to be shot, taken to the hospital, a cesarean, and now wondering about her child, if this child will live.
Mike, I have to ask this question. There are those who would hear the news, if they hear the news at all. You know, the reason I get the news? Well, I get updates from Breaking Israel News, and I look at Times of Israel every day. I see the headlines. Most folks in the United States, most who are in the lands where our voices are heard right now, won't hear this news because it's not reported. Now, here in the United States, some might say, well, why the outrage over this innocent bystander, this mother who was shot and her child? Why don't you have the same outrage about an innocent kid on the south side of Chicago, because innocent people die there every day? You know, on one hand, Mike, I would say we're all, regardless of the venue of the atrocity, the outrage, we have a hard time sustaining that outrage. That's human nature, because it's uncomfortable and it's hard. But tell us again, for someone in the heartland of the United States of America, or someone in South Africa, or someone in Europe, why should they care about these Jewish lives?
You know, I wish I had a very rational answer to your question, Al. Just the very fact that you're asking it causes me to consider just how strange my views are over the world. I think that we should all be outraged at atrocities.
Mike, might I attempt to answer my own question?
Please. I think you might be able to answer it better than I can.
Okay. Why should someone care about Jewish life in the West Bank, even an innocent Jewish life of an unborn child whose life is hanging by a thread? Why should someone care about that more than the life of someone born in the ghetto and can't get out of it? Here's the soundbite. Because the Jewish people are the canaries in the mine for the rest of us.
Mm.
The Jewish people are the only unambiguously extant part of the remnant of Israel, the nation, the covenant nation of Israel, that is still right there in front of our eyes as a testimony that there is a God in heaven and that he is willing and able to keep his promises to redeem all of mankind. So if for some reason he cannot or will not keep his promise to the Jews, then there's no reason to suspect or hope that he will keep the promises to anyone else. And therefore, when someone is taking efforts to eradicate Jewish presence from the land that God says they're supposed to live because I gave it to their fathers, Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, and to their seed perpetually after them, if someone is seeking to deny that right and negate it, then they're trying to negate the covenant that God has made, the only covenant that he's made through which he will save us all. And yeah, that's why it's important. So if you don't care about this unborn Jewish child whose life is hanging by a thread in the Hadassah Hospital in Ankarim right now, then how much are you really going to care about the poor black child who doesn't have much of a chance at life either?
Well, you know, you mentioned, Al, about what's happening regarding the covenant, the covenant people, the covenant land of Israel, and how, you know, you have to go to websites outside of the norm to pick up information about what's happening. Let me go to FoxNews.com, and here is the headline story of Fox News. Bill and Hillary's talking tour sputters as tickets surface at cut rate on Groupon. That's the lead story. Two stories down from that is how Jennifer Aniston tells Ellen about her very quirky naked habit. No, there's nothing wrong with the world. No, we're fine. The embassy has been moved to Jerusalem. Everything's good. Let's eat, drink, and be merry because tomorrow we all get taken off to the funny farm.
Let me make one more comment. And then we have...
Turn it to the wisdom of Barry Phillips.
Yeah.
I'll see if I can go and find some in the drawer around here somewhere.
There's one little unknown, overlooked fact about what happened during the oppression in the days of the Maccabees. You know, there were a whole bunch of Jews who decided that they didn't mind being Greeks,
yeah,
or Hellenized. To the point, by the way, that young men would undergo procedures to reverse a circumcision. Reverse a circumcision? That sounds painful. So that they could compete in the Olympic Games. Now, since athletes in the Olympic Games competed in the nude, then it would be quite easy to tell who's a Jew and who's not. Well, they didn't want to be distinguished. Therefore, they went through this procedure to look Greek.
Mm-hmm.
How is that different from many Jews in the diaspora today? Oh, by the way, or many Christians in diaspora today.
Well, Barry, why don't you take it?
I'm thinking of the violence that's taking place in South Africa, where Native Africans are murdering and pillaging the white farmers. I'm thinking of the drug cartel destroying lives, dismembering bodies, etc., south of our border in Mexico, as well as the violence that's taking place in various inner cities, not just Chicago. First and foremost, it's demonstrated against our brother Yehuda. Hate because of who someone is or what they're not. There, in the inner city, there is inner gang violence that's taking place. And yes, I suppose that there is some racial violence as well. But in Israel, the Jews are not only attacked for who they are, but for who they're not. They're not like the rest of us, and they refuse to be like the rest of us, because it's their calling to be a set-apart people and to be the light of Yah to the nations. That's their calling. That's their role. That's what they're supposed to do. And when men love darkness more than light, they lash out against the light. If we're going to be the light of Yeshua, we're going to have those similar problems. You know, Yeshua said, if the world hated me, don't be surprised when they hate you.
Barry, that sounds like a good way to segue to Cole. Hey, Cole, can you hear us now?
Yes. I apologize, guys. It's part of the problem with having a full-time job. And may that end soon. I really hope that does. I apologize for my tardiness. So.
Well, does that mean you're going to be retired like me or go full-time in the ministry like Barry and Mike?
Full-time in the ministry, and I'm trying to take as calculated a leap of faith as I can do. So you know how that goes, I'm sure. So, but it's abundantly clear that that has to come to an end. That was the message I got at the end of Sukkot this year. So it sounds like I've come into quite the cheery topic here. So,
yeah, we would always, hey, Cole, we would always bring you into a cheery topic because that's what you're pretty much known for.
Right. Yeah, we're talking recipes, right?
You know, in an alternate universe. I love being in being with Cole, and as we go out, occasionally we've been able to minister together. It's the only time that I get to play good cop.
Yeah. Mike gets to step into a different role, I think, and to be honest with you, it's a fiery passion that's growing, yet more tact is being taken on these days, but a desire to see people let go of the lies that they believe and to stand for truth, and not just the truth of the scriptures, of course, that's part of it, the truth and who the Father in heaven and who Yeshua is and what they can do, not that they serve us, but what they have freely given that we have not accepted. But that makes me crazy that the devil has tricked so many people into believing that they can't reach out and grab what he is freely giving.
So, Cole, that hits on what we've been talking about for the last hour.
Oh, good.
Now, yeah, I mean, we've talked about it from the Jewish side and from the Christian side.
Sure.
Folks who are more interested in fitting in and trying to just go along to get along, rather than standing out as the peculiar people of the covenant whom they are called to be.
Right.
Mike and Hanoch explained to us what they saw in menorah lighting in Columbia, South Carolina last week, mm-hmm. where it was more American than Jewish. And we've all seen it in the church, you know, where it's more going through the motions or, you know, I talked about Christmas, you know, it's supposed to be the reason for the season is Jesus was born, but I see more Santa Claus and snowmen than I do manger scenes.
Right. In fact, to say what we want about that, but I mean, the fact that it has to do with his name being proclaimed, whether how we do it or not. It's
yes.
The fact that there is a reminder of a savior on the lawns of churches around the country. I think that's the real issue. I mean, we may not subscribe to that theology anymore, but we certainly subscribe to a form of that name and a form of that character.
Well, so it is. And, you know, at bottom line here is we're the people of Yah. We have the message of coming into relationship with him. What does it take to get people to act on that?
That is a very complicated question. And of course, I can make a general statement and 1.5 million people will say, well, that's not me. And then the other half will go, that is me, or however you break that down. But
no, the other half will say, no, that's them.
That's right. That's a good point. here's what I've discovered is that man's perception of reality, to go really, really deep, has to do more with their sensations and their experiences than hope. And hope is that thing that we strive toward. And most of us, and I say us, a lot of us are looking backwards at where we've been and believing that our story is a telltale sign of who is standing in front of us. And we look at all the troubles and trials and tribulations. The people that come to our ministry have some really serious damage done to their psyche, even sometimes their bodies, through stress or whatever it would be, that a complete lack of shalom about who they are, where they are, what they are striving toward is that shalom. But a lot of them don't believe that they deserve it. I personally believe that the greatest cancer in the body right now is shame, and it's an ungodly shame that does not lead to repentance. It leads to the forfeiture of blessing. And so my point in saying that is this, is that what I'm seeing out and about with everybody in some shape, form, or fashion is some type of inability to accept the grace of Yeshua, especially in the Torah body now, which has been focusing more on works these days, if you will. I was just in a conversation about that this morning, where a young lady took on Torah and did not know where Yeshua's grace fit into that. And I said, the only way you're going to properly keep Torah is with his grace.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so, mm-hmm. And so, you know, if you don't have the freedom, which is what his blood brings, you're wasting your time. You've entered into a dead religion again.
Cole, I want to go back to something, and we can move on from here, but I want to go back to something you mentioned, and there's a question regarding the big conferences. You know, what's going on with the big conferences? Not a lot of people are going to conferences. And I heard something the other day that I think this kind of ties in with something you just said about change, is that a conference is not about changing people. It's about entertaining people.
Mm, okay.
You could probably do a whole show on that.
Easily.
That may be Wednesday night's show, folks. The Lion's Path. Okay. But, yeah. So you're seeing people that are contacting you, they're wanting to change, yes, not just be entertained right now.
I think entertained, and I think in some weird way validated that what they're doing is right. Hey, I respect the folks that are out there on their own and they come to these things and spend money and get hotel rooms and everything like that to go, hey, I'm not crazy for keeping Torah. Look at all these other folks. At the same time, if you're coming to be validated that your beliefs are correct, you have stopped spiritually growing.
Mm-hmm.
You're simply wanting to be agreed with. And I can tell you this, that any conference that I've been to where the Father in Heaven shows up, we find out where all the flaws in our personal testimony of him are very quickly.
Mm-hmm.
And if he's invited to these things at all. And so I would say that entertainment was the famous quote by Leonard Ravenhill, says entertainment is the devil's substitute for joy. I think stands firm in that.
And that, ladies and gentlemen, is why I get to play good cop.
But Cole, we're coming up on the break.
Sure.
But I can say, and let me just attest to all the audience, what Cole just said about seeing where our shortcomings are, I saw this man reveal that at the Rosh Chazak Amatz conference in Snyder last August. And Cole, you were talking about that yourself, how the Father revealed to you something that you had missed. And maybe we can unpack that a little more on the other side of the break.
Sure.
But right now we're going to have to pay the bills and listen to the music, and we'll be back on the Remnant Mode in a few minutes.
We are the children of the light. We have the keys to this life. We are the children of
Hey, welcome back to this and final segment of the Remnant Road for December 10th, 2018, the last day of Hanukkah. This is Al McCarn along with Barry Phillips and Mike Clayton, and we are pleased to bring to you from Leavenworth, Kansas, Cole Davis. Hey, Cole, how's the weather out there next to the Missouri River?
To be honest with you, it's not too bad today, but it is frigid at times. We've had more snow already this year than we've had in like the last three. So something's up weather-wise.
Yeah,
so.
Yeah, I could say the same thing about our part of the country, but well, yeah. Okay. We were talking about how do we encapsulate this? Walking into the fullness of our calling as the covenant people of the Almighty God. How's that?
Yeah, well, that's simple, right? But
yeah, okay.
Yeah, I mean, the concept is, and then the execution, however, a little more challenging. The fullness of it is let me back up here a second. I get excited when I talk about this because I like seeing people step into themselves. You know what I mean? It's like they become what they are supposed to be. And when you see that, you literally watch a human battering ram emerge where nothing will stand in the way and their faith becomes ironclad. Most of the time when we have I'm sorry, go ahead.
Yeah, and I wanted to use the lion analogy because your program here on Hebrew Nation is called The Lion's Path. And yes, you're all about restoring the lions of Israel. Mm-hmm. So maybe if you could outline what that means, and then we could go from there.
Yeah, to become that lion means that you are a lion has the most dominion of all the creatures according to the scriptures. They have the prominent head, as though it's almost like the animal that the Father chooses to embody everybody who is walking in the perfect design that he intended. And that includes actually the enemies of Israel that are being more righteous than they are at a time. You know, lions also, at one point, I believe it's in Amos, represented Babylon, who is going to go do the Father's will. So as far as that goes, our show is about encountering those things. We found that most of the people of Yah settle in where they are comfortable, not where they should be. So they begin to step into some place where they have the Father where they want him rather than where he wants them. Because when you have the Father where he wants or where you want him, there is no more sacrifice or confronting painful things or redefining yourself or that insecurity in your own view of yourself. And you go, I'm not really sure if I can do this. But it is those that really, truly want to press in that I'm finding are really being pressed these days and being made uncomfortable and having to move forward. They have no other choice.
Now, I would submit that, we have grown up seeing this in a Christian context, but it is the people of Yah, period. It's also in the Jewish context because it's two halves of the same people.
Right.
And we've been talking on this program about the assimilation of American Jews, for example, and the assimilation of American Christians. How do we break out of that? What does it take?
Well, I think first and foremost, the thing that most of us are afraid of is rejection. And when you're bringing something that causes this much confrontation, meaning when you're bringing this, meaning the testimony of Yeshua, when you have something that brings this much confrontation with sin, then you cause people to question their worldview. And we have seen throughout history that nothing changes in a society without a ton of bloodshed. No social change has been bloodless. And what I'm seeing is that many people in our walk, whatever form that takes, who call themselves who we are, and I'm, of course, course, you know, Cole, what have you sacrificed? You know, I got that. But at the same time, we have not paid a price for this. We hold it a little too cheaply. And something the first century believers definitely saw was the value of this because of the blood that had to be spilled because of it. And even the agents that were spilling the blood saw the value of it eventually and had to come to confrontation with it.
Now, this is one. This gets to one of the things that I wanted to talk with you about, Cole. How much of this is just a lack of knowledge? The fact that we haven't explained to our young people or helped them discover the truth of the living God, particularly in this Torah walk as we embrace Torah and tend to leave Messiah Yeshua behind.
I would definitely
let me just back up here, Al, real quick, not to totally correct you, but could we take the word we out?
I understand. I'm speaking the collective we of the body in general.
Yeah. And you know I'm not comfortable with that.
I understand. Yes.
Yeah.
So it is a thing that has happened, and certain nameless persons who might number in the millions.
Yeah.
To what extent are said persons, some of whom may or may not be on this program right now, culpable of not helping the rising generation understand the reality of the Messiah who brought them into this walking
room? Thank you.
Al, your government employee is showing.
There's a reason I'm a diplomatic historian.
Yeah.
That's right. So, what was the question again, Al?
Okay, well, let me preface it this way. So I mentioned on the show a couple of weeks ago, I had brought back from my father-in-law's library Lee Strobel's book, The Case for Christ, published in 1998, and I just finished reading it and was glad I did because Lee reminded me why I had embraced this living divine Messiah, Yeshua HaMashiach, Jesus Christ as I knew him when I was 15 years old. And the evidence that was presented to me then by Josh McDowell, by C.S. Lewis, by others who spoke into my lives, it is still the right evidence. It is still there. Mm-hmm. It is still valid that the New Testament is the Word of God. So is the Old right. Testament. Yeshua mm-hmm. is the Messiah. He did say so. He did walk it out. The people who followed him went to their graves proclaiming his resurrection. To what extent has this rising generation not been exposed to this? If we want people to become the Lions of Israel, how do we do it? And what do we do to reacquaint them with the Messiah that was served in the first place?
So, huge question. However, I think the answer is very simple in this case. We have a knowledge, excuse me. With the exception of certain persons listening now involved in this program, we have a lot of knowledge about him, but our knowledge of him is still developing. We know in the scriptures who he says he is. Whether we know him personally or not is still, I used to say we don't have it, and now I will say it's developing. I'm trying to speak more positively these days. That is something where it's not... I was reading a book recently called The Secret of the Stairs, and it's about the Song of Solomon. And it talked about there is a huge difference between the bride and the daughters of Jerusalem who know him, who want him, but are not necessarily seeking him in the middle of the night and striving to find him and professing their love for him and pouring themselves out. They would like the package that he offers, but not necessarily the relationship. And so I would definitely say that we have a people that is still actively becoming the bride and losing that identity of being a spectator at the wedding to being the participant in the wedding, if that makes any sense at all. So what I'm seeing is that and this is where the young people, my son included, my sons and daughters are included in this, where they, when you watch a young person hear all of this, most of the time they believe it without question because their life experience has not taught them that that things that are beautiful or things that are lovely or things that are good are not in some way tainted. Mm-hmm. They have not been given and taken on cynicism yet. And I think that's a there is a certain amount of idealism, a certain amount of romance that needs to come about in this, where we have to fall in love with our bridegroom, not just fall in love with the idea of him. Wouldn't it be awesome one day when the kingdom comes? No, the kingdom is coming. Do you know this guy or do you not? And I think that many are being sifted out of this walk who are losing. They don't lose Torah, by the way. They don't lose Torah. They lose their testimony of their bridegroom, who invited them in the first place.
That's what I'm getting at, Cole. On Erev Shabbat, we were sitting in our living room talking this out, going over the scripture portions for this week. And I asked, in this case, my daughter and her boyfriend, how do you know that Yeshua is the Messiah? And my daughter looked at me, and she was only half joking when she said, because you told me. Right. And that's when I pulled out my copy of The Case for Christ, and I pulled out Josh McDowell's Evidence That Demands a Verdict, and I said, here, if you would like to take these and dig the answers out for yourselves, because you need to. Are we doing that enough? And I unapologetically use the "we" with caveat out there.
Yeah, I'm with you on that, Al. And I mean, it's just one of those things that, I don't. As Cole just said, he's trying not to go always to the negative, and so to lump everybody in there. That's the reason that I try to take that collective "we" out there sometimes. Yep. But what you're talking about, Al, is what I've taught for many years. That our children have to come to a place of a crisis of faith, that the Messiah, the Elohim, the Messiah that we have taught them becomes theirs. They own him. They own their testimony, not just speaking about a testimony.
Yes. Yeah. That's that moment that we all have to cross, where we actually have to ask ourselves the question, do we believe this or not? And there is something that I have noticed in many congregations that I go to, these conferences, if you will. I personally have witnessed that what people find important, they will force their children to do. What they are not forcing their children to do is two things that creates intimacy with the Most High, and that is worship, and that is prayer. I watch little children run off to something while worship is happening. When you are supposed to be in that intimate moment between the Messiah, between the Most High, and you and your family, we tend to put our kids away or put them aside or let them be distracted or give them something that has a screen that will placate them. And I'm sitting here going, that will come back very quickly on us because we are not instituting how important that is.
And that's what I wanted to find out is, how do we fix it? What do we do better?
Something that is a pet peeve of mine nowadays, and I think I inherited this from Mike, however he's right, okay, on this one thing anyways. But I've inherited this, which is that general lack of focus or the avoidance of worship in what we do. Because the reason I say that is this. That's what we're going to be doing for eternity, is worship. Why are we avoiding it now? And what I mean by avoiding, the phrase that makes me crazy is Hebrew time, yet I see it over and over again everywhere I go, where people will show up 20 minutes late to service, conveniently missing all of the worship, yet they will sit and espouse their Torah knowledge. It sounds very derogatory, and I guess it is. They will espouse their Torah knowledge while avoiding his presence. I don't understand that. That's something I absolutely don't understand. You'll sit there and show your intellect, yet won't show your intimacy.
Ooh.
I've also understood this. If you don't worship at home, you're not going to worship anywhere else effectively. You may get into a corporate situation where music is being played and dance is being presented, and you may feel the excitement of the moment. But if you haven't prepared your heart through personal time of worship, you don't know how to enter in. You can join the activity, but do you know how to enter in?
I apologize. Somebody called.
So you go to a conference, and if you're skipping the music portion and the worship portion, it could be you don't identify it as entertaining enough. And if the list of speakers are not entertaining enough, then we don't even go. we're in this entertainment, feed me, excite me, thrill me, give me what I'm looking for as my next bag of golden nuggets. And we're struggling to present the exhilarating circus show enough that people want to come back and see the same act again. But the scripture says that we are to rehearse the same stories when we're sitting down and when we're on our way, when we're getting ready to lie down, when we rise up, that there is a consistency that needs to be offered. The same stories over and over again, do they become a part of us? And we don't want that. We've already been there. We've already done that. Very quick case in point, years and years ago, I was a part of a youth camp program. And one year for the upper age teenage group, we decided that we would bring in a hot air balloon. And they lined up before breakfast, six at a time, to get in a hot air balloon, be taken up about 150 feet in the air, being given a panoramic view of the Roanoke Valley here in Virginia, and then brought back down again. It was such a great success that we decided we would do that again next year. Less than half even bothered to line up. It was a flop. And then we realized, been there, done that. And so if we keep offering the same thing, while we may be correct in the scriptural model, it's not what the American model prefers.
Well, I would say it's not in the Greek model of which we are a descendant, because I remember Acts 17, when Paul is there at Athens, those folks there are always listening for something new. And here comes this, here comes this Jewish guy who has something new. Let's hear him. But the mercies of the Lord are supposed to be new every day. And how do we get there? Barry, I think you hit on it. If we're not prepared to, if we're not habitually in that place of intimacy or seeking it out in our homes, who's to say we're going to get there when we're out in the corporate setting?
Yeah, a genuine worshiper will worship anywhere that he's at. His lifestyle, his being will be worship. And you don't have to sing and dance to worship. I mean, there's many things that the Father can receive as worship. Dr. Sakina taught us that, you know, a righteous conversation can be worship. Encouragement of the brothers is an act of worship. There are many things that Yah can see as worship, but certainly if we are given opportunity to sing and dance before him, we ought to take advantage of that.
But how do we keep it fresh?
Sing a new song every worship service.
I would say that the desire and the hunger and thirst for righteousness should be keeping it fresh as well. You know, when you start to get healed, you get kind of hungry for the healing. And you start to confront those things in his presence and go, Father, what I thought was true was not. The thing that was painful, I thought that represented truth. I thought that's just who I was. And you begin to learn a new version. And this sounds like Tony Robbins, but I mean, it's like a new version of you that he has made with his hand. When he takes that rough spot on the pot that you are and smooths it out, you get a hunger and a desire to become more and more like him. Now, is that comfortable when he convicts you and pushes in on you and causes that pressure? Absolutely not. when we were at the conference in Texas, that was something I could barely sit still during Barry's message because it was pressuring me so much. That conviction was on me so much that it was impossible. It would have been an act of rebellion to leave Texas the same, that I can't.
You know, there's a lot required in this to take, and I think of my own experience, there are some external requirements, things that people in our lives have to do, like our elders in particular, and there's some internal requirements. There's the want to, the want to reach out and grab it for yourself. And Cole, you had both there in Snyder, Texas. And you're telling us, I mean, where are we satisfied that we have done all that we can do?
You know, I still struggle with that because there are parts of my walk where I go, I could do better there, or I could do better here. I didn't give my attention here or there. and I start taking inventory of what I do. And I think that's good to a degree. However, when I start to base my relationship off of my relationship with him, off of what I do, I begin to get a very negative view of the entire process, if you will, the entire situation, because I'm looking at all my shortcomings. At the same time, I'm sitting here going, Father, you have the answer to all of those shortcomings. So I come to you when I realize that I'm at the end of myself, when I have no more knowledge, no more wisdom, no more anything, and I simply am asking for power to change that thing about me, to make, to fill this hole in me or whatever it is, or take this thing out of me that's causing me pain or whatever it may be. I think that that is something that can only, how can I say this? I'm struggling with words here a little bit because it's almost beyond words, because I'm sitting here talking to you like it's a formula, but it's really not. It's a hunger and drive. And that's kind of what the lions are about. They have a drive. They have a heart in them where they are going to go after everything that threatens them, but also everything offered to them. That's the part of it that I'm going, that's the thing. They don't hesitate when it comes to the opportunity to eat and take and partake of what the land is offering, so to speak. They don't hesitate to take hold of blessings that are freely being given. That's the part that makes me so sad about many in this walk who are forfeiting their blessings because of their experience, even though the hand is open to them.
I mean, that'll have to be the last word. Thank you, Cole, for joining us on the Remnant Road.
Thank you so much.
Well, you've seen it with your own two eyes. Brother Judah is alive, and Joseph is at his side. Hallelujah. Hallelujah.